In the interrogation room, Detective Matthew Walsh sat an arm's length away from the murder suspect. He was sure he had the right guy, who had committed the grisly crime of gunning down his entire family while they slept. The Baltimore County Police Detective listened closely to the suspect's tone. He watched his facial expressions. He couldn't see any emotions, no signs of the typical grieving you would expect from someone who had just lost their entire family.
You haven't shed one tear for your family.
You were totally unemotional about this. You walk into a house, your whole family's murdered. And you're just, I didn't do it. Why would I do it?
The murder suspect was Nicholas Browning, a 15-year-old high school sophomore. Nick was in Boy Scouts, got good grades, and was a regular at his church. He seemed like an all-American kid. He played music and sports. He didn't have a violent past or show any signs of violence at all. But now here he was, in this police interrogation room in the early morning hours, sitting next to a detective who questioned his lack of tears after his whole family had been murdered. Today on Court Junkie, we're telling the story of the Browning family murders in Maryland. This is Jillian, and in partnership with Law and Crime, you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 165. It's summertime, and there are so many things I've been excited about doing again. Festivals, fireworks shows, seeing friends I haven't seen in a long time. It looks like summer will be almost normal this year. If you want your brain to feel like it's summertime and like it just took a refreshing dip in a pool, download Best Fiends. Best Fiends is way more fun than the other matching puzzle games out there, and you can play them right on your phone. With thousands of puzzles to solve, there's something new every day. Once you start playing Best Fiends, it's kind of hard to stop. I'm now just passing 300 levels, but for Independence Day, they came out with what they called Fiendependence Day challenges, which were really fun. You can strategically team up with each character based on their special abilities to gain extra points and items to level up your fiends. It's hard to ever be bored with Best Fiends. They release new challenges, characters, and themes all the time. So download the 5-star rated puzzle game Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. School's out for the summer, but if your business is running QuickBooks, you'll never get a break. QuickBooks manual processes, integration difficulties, and glitchy delays will leave you scrambling for the numbers you need. Failing to graduate to NetSuite will leave you stuck in summer school while your friends party. NetSuite by Oracle is the number one cloud financial system, no matter how big your business grows. With visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, e-commerce, and more, NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. Automate your processes with NetSuite and close your books in no time. 93% of surveyed businesses increased their visibility and control since graduating from QuickBooks to NetSuite. And special financing is back. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program only for those ready to graduate today. Head on over to netsuite.com/court right now. That's special financing at netsuite.com/court. netsuite.com/court. It was a winter afternoon in 2008 when an emergency call was made from the Browning family residence. A man wasn't breathing. Blood was coming out of his nose, and blood stained the couch that he lay on. Patrick Smith is the voice you hear on that February 2, 2008 911 call. He sounds unsure of what to do. He doesn't volunteer to do CPR. He fears it may already be too late. He admits he is scared. Patrick had sort of been thrown into this situation. Patrick, a dad to a teenager who was friends with Nick Browning, was acting as the chauffeur that day and dropped off his son, Nick, and two other boys at Nick's home. The friends had spent the weekend together at a sleepover and then went to the mall. Patrick was pulling out of the driveway, about to leave, when two of the boys ran out of the house with an urgent message. Nick's father was hurt. Patrick stopped the car and got out to investigate. It didn't take long for him to realize that something was seriously amiss. John Browning, Nick's father, lay motionless on a couch in the family room. Nick checked upstairs and reported that his mom and two younger brothers were covered in blood.
Baltimore County, 911.
Yes, ma'am. We need police and ambulance assistance.
Okay, I can help you, sir. We'll need to ask a few questions to get some help out.
Uh-huh.
What's the address where you need to
get? Well, we're at a Powers Lane.
Powers Lane. What's the address at Powers Lane?
I'm looking on the address right now.
Okay.
John Browning, 10905 Powers Avenue.
10905 Powers Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Is that close to Sherwood Road?
Yes, ma'am.
What's your name?
My name is Patrick.
Oh, okay. And what's going on there?
It seems John's on the couch. It looks like he's hurt. I'm not sure what's wrong with him.
You just came in there? You just came to the house?
Uh-huh.
He said he's lying on the couch. What does he look like? What's wrong with him?
He's a white male. It looks like there's blood coming out of his nose.
Is he conscious?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Now, can you check to see if he's breathing?
I don't believe he is. I'm not sure.
Are you afraid to check?
Yeah.
The dispatcher told him that help was on the way.
Okay. You say he hasn't moved?
I haven't seen him move. I haven't seen his eyes move or anything.
By then, the emergency responders were on their way to the beautiful farm-style house with a wraparound porch in Cockeysville, Maryland, an affluent suburb located 20 minutes north of Baltimore.
Hey, how you doing? I have no idea. I have no idea.
Who found him?
I did not. Not me here.
Is there anybody else here?
He says there's other people upstairs, sir.
The officers are there?
Yeah, the officers are here.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, okay?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to let you go. You can talk to the officers.
Okay.
The officers went inside. On the family room couch, 45-year-old John Browning lay on his left side, his head on a pillow, his body tucked in by a blanket as if he were only asleep. John, an attorney and Boy Scout leader, had been shot in the head. It seemed like a scene frozen in time. A bag of popcorn was open on the end table. A book hung halfway off the shelf of another table. A dictionary rested on the floor. Upstairs in the master bedroom, Tammy Browning, John's wife of almost 20 years, lay in bed. Blood splatter stained the wall behind the bed. She was covered up to her neck in blankets. She had been shot in the face. The area around her eyes was dark and blue. Two casings had been left on the blanket. The door to Tammy's jewelry box that was stored in her closet was open. Several pieces of jewelry were on the floor. The Browning family tragedy didn't end there. The final two victims, Tammy and John's two youngest boys, Benjamin, 11, and Gregory, 14, were dead in the bedroom they shared, laying in their twin beds, lifeless. The Baltimore County Police Department was now investigating a quadruple homicide. The basement sliding glass door had been left unlocked and was slightly ajar. Nick Browning, the lone surviving family member, leaned against a pickup truck tailgate outside the house. His head was down as he looked at the ground. The night before, Nick and his three buddies were having a sleepover at the home of another friend named Ryan. The itinerary? Watching movies and playing lacrosse. By nightfall, Nick told his friends that he had an idea. At around 12:45 a.m., he left Ryan's house to sneak back to his house, a 20-minute walk, and steal the keys to his family's Ford Expedition so the teens could go joyriding. Perhaps there was a sense of entitlement. Nick, who was just days away from turning 16, thought he was getting the expedition as a birthday present. Nick left, but he was gone for hours. One boy, Alex, fell asleep just after Nick left. When Alex woke up around 5 a.m., Nick was still gone. Alex called Nick, who said he had gotten lost and was heading back to Ryan's house. Nick later claimed the lights had been on at his house, so he fell asleep in the apparently unlocked car and said he never got the keys. The following morning, Nick's mom was supposed to pick him up at 9 a.m. to do chores, but she never came. The boys headed out to the mall to play video games and hang out for the afternoon. Alex noticed Nick had the expedition keys in his coat pocket after all. Nick had lied when he said he never got them. Later that day, Patrick Smith was the adult who picked them up and drove them back to Nick's house, where police believed Nick had staged the discovery of his family's bodies. As investigators worked to clear the scene at the Browning home, WBAL reported that several young people showed up, explaining that Nick had invited them to come over that evening. Nick Browning was brought into the police station for questioning. He was offered a fast food meal. He seemed impressed that it was on the house.
I feel bad feeding you junk food. If we run to Burger King and get you something.
That'd be fine.
What do you want?
The double, like a double bacon cheeseburger or something.
Okay. Fries and a Diet Coke.
Yeah, be great. Thank you. Ready to pay or? Thank you.
For 7 minutes, Nick sat alone at the small rectangular table with his burger, eating. Now with a full stomach, Nick's interview kept going. It grew more intense, less friendly. Detective Walsh accused Nick of being involved with his family's murders. The detective placed a photograph of the Browning family on the table. "I didn't do it," Nick whispered, according to the investigative report. The detective countered. He outlined some of the evidence in the case that was building fast against the teenager. Police had found the keys to John's gun locker safe under Nick's mattress. Nick repeated it again. He didn't do it. The detectives presented their theory of a motive. Maybe Nick killed his family because his parents were too strict on him? Nick had already admitted that he had been in trouble recently for drinking. And sometimes he had issues with his dad.
I'm sorry, not too much. There's no reason for me to kill my family. They don't. Yes, they're strict on me. So what? They don't ground me when they find me with alcohol. I took a trip two weekends later. One, yes, last weekend I took my friend up to Deep Creek and we skied the entire weekend. This weekend I was at a friend's house. You know, yes, they're harsh, but they're not that harsh really. And they let me do what I want. There's no reason.
This wasn't a burglary. This wasn't someone breaking in the house.
How do you know?
I know. We know these things. I've been in this job for 19 years. Over 19 years now.
There's no reason for me. Why would I jeopardize? You know, you put money into it. I have a very large inheritance coming to me, mm-hmm. regardless if there's insurance money involved or not. I don't know how much insurance money they have. That is coming to me. He has real estate on the side. I am set. I can fill out the rest of my life without that. There's no money reason. They're great to me. I love my family. We do, you know. My vacation's planned. I love it. Wouldn't change anything in the world for.
Nick continued to claim he was innocent. "I love my family," he said. Detective Walsh seemed frustrated by the teenager who refused to cry or show any feelings as Nick sat stoically being questioned as a suspect in his family's murders. Detective Walsh didn't believe the murders were connected to a robbery, despite the scattered jewelry in Tammy's room and the unlocked basement door.
I don't believe you. I'm looking in the eyes of a stone cold killer. There's no remorse. Only people that can lay here and sleep
of the guilty. You haven't shed a tear. That's why I think there may not have been a reason. Maybe you are just a stone cold killer.
I didn't cry.
That you show no emotion?
Don't show emotion. That condemns me?
Showing goes a long way.
Emotions, people play up their emotions, they play them down. You know, it's...
Some things are uncontrollable. The people who have set stories in their head act like this. People that have maybe almost convinced themselves they didn't do this. This is how people act. I know you don't believe it, but we see this every single day. I know the guilty by the way they act. Not even talking about the evidence. I'm just looking at the way you're acting tonight.
The detectives went ahead and arrested Nick for the murders. He was handcuffed to the bar in the interview room. "Where's the gun?" Detective Walsh asked. "That's for you to find," Nick said, according to the investigative report. But Nick's facade was starting to break. He began to cry. He said he and his father had been at Boy Scout camp when his father called him a fuck-up. His dad was hard on him, he admitted. He said he knew he was in jeopardy of not getting the Ford Expedition for his birthday. He also knew his father was stressed from work. Then, according to the investigative report, Nick confessed. He told how he snuck back home from his friend's house to get the car when the idea came to him to shoot his father. He knew the gun was in the workshop. His father was lying on the couch, asleep in the family room, as Nick stood with the gun for 30 minutes. He pointed the weapon at his dad's head.
What happened?
I walked up. I sat there for a half hour.
He was sleeping?
Yeah, standing over him. And then I went between putting the gun up to his head and pulling it back down and up.
Do you have a pillow up too? Or?
Yeah, just the gun. The gun was, I'm not sure if I meant to pull the trigger, if it just went off. And then once that happened, I freaked out, and I thought, you know, it'd all come down, but I don't even know if they woke up or whatever.
Nick said he didn't know if he meant to pull the trigger or if the gun just went off. He then freaked out. He thought the rest of his family would wake up and come down soon. He then described how he killed his mom.
I shot my mom.
She's still sleeping.
Yeah. I waited for a little bit, then I think she went back to sleep. Mm-hmm. I shot her.
He then shot his younger brothers.
Why the brothers, man?
I thought if no one was there to say anything, that my story would go, because I'm the only one. I just got scared. I didn't want this to happen.
Nick admitted he had shot everyone in the head. Why? The detective asked. Because that way it would be quicker and instant, Nick replied. Detective Walsh asked him again where the gun was, and Nick agreed that he would take them to where he had hidden it, in some bushes. When the interview was over, Nick was taken into custody and processed. In the early morning hours of February 3rd, police found a Smith & Wesson Model 639 pistol under a tree near an intersection that was less than a quarter mile from the Browning home, just as Nick described where it would be. John Browning had apparently bought the gun for about $300 from a clerk at his law firm in 2004. He reportedly had been concerned about his wife going to the family lake house by herself, and he was worried about reports of bears nearby. To the outside world, it might seem strange that John kept any weapons in the house at all. His life had been impacted by gun violence growing up. His brother had accidentally shot and killed his 15-year-old sister in the 1970s, according to reports by several media outlets. Nick was charged as an adult with 4 counts of first-degree murder, and he was also appointed a guardian by the Circuit Court of Baltimore County. His then-attorney, Steve Silverman, said Nick was traumatized by his family's deaths and questioned the accuracy of his confession during the hour-long police interview. "I'm concerned about the circumstances surrounding this interview," he said in a February 5th court hearing where bail was denied. Eventually, Nick would have a high-powered defense attorney, Joshua Treem, who was well-known in the greater community. Treem had once represented Lee Boyd Melvo, the 17-year-old D.C. sniper who committed a series of shootings in 2002. Now, he would be representing Nick Browning as he faced charges of quadruple homicide. After a year unlike any other, we all deserve some summer fun. But be on the lookout for new travel scams designed by cyber criminals to steal your identity. Help protect yourself online by being mindful of online ads, independently verified deals with the company, and don't rush into giving away info on suspicious sites. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our information at risk on the internet. In an instant, a cyber criminal could steal what's yours, sometimes even harm your finances and your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can help protect what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year at lifelock.com/court. That's lifelock.com/court for 25% off. Live music, festivals, summer vacations. This summer is showing welcoming signs of a more normal life ahead. Finally, you can get back to enjoying life's little pleasures like smiling at your neighbor, seeing a movie, and going to the post office. Okay, some parts of normal life aren't so great, but with Stamps.com, you can skip those trips to the post office and save on postage. You can print official U.S. postage and shipping labels 24/7 without having to leave your desk or buy any fancy equipment. Then, once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop-off. It's that simple. Stamps.com also offers deals you can't get anywhere else, like up to 40% off USPS and up to 66% off UPS shipping rates. Stop wasting time going to the post office and go to stamps.com instead. There's no risk, and with my promo code CORT, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in CORT. That's stamps.com, promo code CORT. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. The community had the terrible dilemma of mourning the lives of 4 people taken prematurely, while also acknowledging that Nick, the eldest child who had admitted to the crimes, was also another life ruined. When Nick's paternal grandmother learned that he had been charged with the murders, she asked the police to relay a message to him. The message was that she would stand by him. According to the investigative report, the police lieutenant promised to pass word to Nick. Nick's maternal grandfather also wanted Nick to know that he still loved him. The Baltimore Sun newspaper reported on the funeral as nearly 1,300 people paid their respects to the family in a Baltimore County church. The newspaper article said, quote, "None of the dozen friends and relatives who spoke mentioned the eldest son by name, although some did speak of loving all the Brownings." The final speaker, the Reverend Bill Brown of Epworth United Methodist, the family's church, was the only one to mention the boy in jail. Looking at the families sitting in the pews, Brown told them that he had decided to forgive Nick and asked them to do the same. I had to ask myself if I could practice what I preached. I came to the conclusion that I can, Brown said. I don't know if you are in a place to think about forgiveness, but I invite you to search your hearts and reach out to God. Crisis counselors were on hand at the middle school that Nick's brothers attended, and also at Nick's high school. It might seem strange to some to have them available there, since Nick was still alive, but many students reportedly had a hard time processing what their classmate had done. A listener was the one who first contacted me about this case. She told me that she knew Nick growing up. She called him a typical Baltimore teenager who was cocky from a wealthy family connected to the community. She first found out what happened to the Brownings when she received a text message from a friend telling her that Nick had walked in on his whole family dead. She told me she couldn't stop thinking about it and thinking about what that must have been like for him. But when she went to work the next day, she got a text from another friend saying that Nick was actually the killer. Like in most tragedies, the media and the community tried to ask the question that seemed impossible to get a true answer. Why? How could this happen? Media reports portrayed Nick as a good kid and stated that he never showed signs of mental illness. He was an honor student and played sports. He had never been in trouble before, his attorney would say. How could he kill his family? Investigators interviewed people who knew Nick, such as his classmates and friends, to gain more insight into his thinking, to unravel how he could shoot his sleeping parents and siblings. Some of the interviews failed to bring any real answers. Some acknowledged Nick complained his father rode him too hard. Others said he had a fairly normal teenage relationship with his dad, with the typical ups and downs. But some of the interviews dug deeper. One person said Nick seemed heavily focused on money and his dad's will and how the assets would get divided up, just like Nick brought that up during the police interview. Peter had known Nick since elementary school and rode the same bus, although he didn't consider him to be a close friend. Peter, alongside his dad, went to the police precinct to be interviewed. According to the investigative report, Peter told the detectives that several times over the past year, Nick talked about his father's will on their bus ride. Quote, John Browning had told Nick that all of his money is distributed evenly between the three brothers, Nick, Greg, and Ben. At one point on the bus and again in the gym locker room, Nick was heard to have said, I would kill my father for the money. The inheritance apparently stayed on Nick's mind. 2 to 3 weeks before the murders, Nick again brought up the subject on the bus. Quote, Nick again was talking about having another conversation with his father, where Nick had asked his father what would happen if his two brothers had died. John Browning apparently told Nick the next closest living relative would then get all the money. But Peter and the others never took Nick seriously. He was always the joking type, the report said. Nick never said he was going to kill his father or family, but he used to tell several other students that he would kill them for the money. Peter's father remembered something too. There was clearly animosity between Nick and his father. Nick was in Boy Scouts, moving up the ranks to become a heralded Eagle Scout. He had just received a new handkerchief to show he was one step closer. Quote, Nick had actually burned the tie because he did not want to proceed in the Boy Scouts, but his father was making him get his Eagle Scout. Nick's demeanor and actions within the last year in the Boy Scouts was affecting his ability to get promoted to Eagle Scout too, the report said. Nick offered his side to investigators. According to the report, Nick had told the investigators that he had been emotionally and physically abused by his father. But the more than 800-page report didn't provide additional details. Media reports described John, the patriarch, as a real estate attorney who is active in his church and was involved in teaching the youth, including his sons, in Boy Scouts. A forensic psychiatrist who was called by the defense testified at a July 2008 hearing about his time spent talking with Nick. The purpose of the hearing was for the judge to decide if Nick should be tried in juvenile court or remain in adult court. Dr. Neil Bloomberg described Nick as fantasizing about killing his parents as he walked back home to steal the car for a joyride. "I could do what I want. There would be no restrictions," Nick had told him, according to his testimony as reported by the Baltimore Sun. Nick was in a trance-like state when he killed his family one by one. "He heard the sounds of gunshots, but he could not remember pulling the trigger," the psychiatrist said. He also told the court that Nick's parents had been verbally and physically abusing him, an escalation that had led to the killings. The judge ruled Nick would remain in adult court. There would be no trial. Just before Halloween 2008, at a hearing where the defense was expected to argue that Nick's confession should not be admissible in court, a plea deal emerged instead. Prosecutors had been seeking four life prison sentences without the possibility of parole. But now, under this plea agreement, Nick would plead guilty to four counts of first-degree murder in exchange for parole following two consecutive life prison terms. As a prosecutor read out loud the details of what had happened, Nick sat weeping at the defense table. Here's how a prosecutor described how Nick killed his 11-year-old brother, Ben, from the Baltimore Sun. Quote, "Benjamin began to stir, and the defendant raised the pistol yet again. He shot Benjamin twice in the face. One of the bullets grazed Benjamin's left index finger as he put his hand over his face prior to being shot. The defendant turned and walked away from the room, and the wallpaper border that was now splattered with the blood of his brothers." She then described how, after the killings, he returned to his friend's house and played video games, and then went to the mall with his friends. She said he repeatedly called his home, his family's cell phones, and their vacation home, leaving messages for his parents and brothers saying he loved them and would see them soon. Nick's sentencing hearing was held a few months later, in January 2009. Before the sentencing, the prosecution played in court for the first time the police video of Nick calmly eating his meal for 7 minutes and then giving his confession. "I cannot make the pain go away," Nick wrote in a statement, but he was too overcome with emotion to say it, the Sun reported. Instead, Nick's attorney read it out loud. "I never considered what effect my actions would have. I thought only of myself." Baltimore County Circuit Judge Thomas J. Bollinger Sr. sentenced Nick to two consecutive life sentences and two concurrent life sentences, although Nick, now 16 at this time, could be eligible for parole in 30 years. He was too young for the death penalty. Around this same time, Baltimore's media had been covering another case that seemed eerily similar. Lewin C. Powell III, a 16-year-old private school student from Baltimore County, killed his mother with a baseball bat and tried to attack his father in 2008 after he was scolded for his grades. Just like Nick, he was sentenced to life in prison at age 17 in 2009. In 2014, Nick was 21 years old and stood before a Baltimore County judge as his defense sought to reduce his sentence. Joshua Treem, his attorney, argued that because he had multiple life sentences, Nick wasn't getting the mental health services he needed. The motion was filed for Nick to serve all of the life terms at the same time, with all but 30 years suspended, as reported by the Baltimore Sun. Treem pointed out that Nick would not be released into society without the approval of a parole board. The state argued Nick's sentence was deserved. Deputy State's Attorney Robin Coffin said this during the hearing. It was the state's position at the time of sentencing, and the state's position today, that this crime was so heinous that Nicholas Browning should never get out of jail. At the time of the murder, when he was speaking with detectives, the only thing he said about his parents was that they were harsh and strict. The judge ruled against Nick's motion. After the hearing, Coffin spoke to reporters and said Nick had reportedly said that he would give his own life if he could take all of this back, a sentiment she wasn't buying.
Months before the murder, he had told children on the bus, 16-year-old, 15-year-olds, that he was tired of his father telling him what to do, and he was going to kill his father, and he was going to kill his brother so he didn't have to share the inheritance.
Reports also surfaced that Nick was using a prisoner pen pal site, and Coffin said some of the things he wrote on his profile indicate that he has no remorse for what he did.
Nowhere does he say, oh my God, I have a tragic life story that I need help sharing. When he talks about, they ask about siblings, he says none. That's pretty callous.
What she's referring to there is that on Nick's profile, there's a series of questions he can answer. Next to number of siblings he has, he wrote none. Nick's bio on the site read, quote, I came to prison at the age of 15, entering a world that I was not ready for in the least. I'm now 19 years old, and somehow I've made it through so far. I have a long road ahead of me, and I would love to have someone to talk to through this fucked up journey of mine. All things considered, I think I'm still upbeat about life, despite my bleak surroundings. I love to have fun, especially playing sports out in the yard or joking around with my friends in here. I can be serious at times too, and I still have hope for my future. I'm enrolled in college classes. I want to be ready for whatever life has in store for me, inside or out. Whoever is reading this, reach out to me if you're interested. I'm open to anything or anyone. If nothing else, I have an interesting story to tell. Someone from my background generally doesn't end up in prison. I've grown and seen so much in the past couple years of my life, more so than had I lived a normal one. I never expected in my worst nightmare to end up here in prison, but I try to accept it and just live. Nick's sentence remained unchanged. In recent times, Maryland legislators have renewed their focus in looking at how juveniles in Maryland's criminal justice system are sentenced. Should those who committed serious crimes as youth be sentenced to life without parole? Maryland lawmakers occasionally brought up Nick's case in the conversation about the Juvenile Restoration Act. Democratic State Delegate Jazz Lewis sponsored the bill that would forbid juvenile offenders to be sentenced to life without parole. The bill also would create a process for juvenile offenders to seek reconsideration of prior sentences if they were convicted as an adult and were imprisoned for at least 20 years. The state lawmaker spoke about the proposed changes and why the bill was important during a March 1st, 2021 virtual press conference.
The Juvenile Restoration Act ensures that children who are sentenced to extremely long sentences will have a meaningful, indefinite chance at review through sentencing hearings before a judge. It allows for victims to participate in that process too. You know, so one thing we have made sure to state is that, you know, one, we believe that it is not morally, it is not morally defensible for children to die in jail. For things that they did when their brains weren't fully developed. We still allow a process for victims to participate in the process. But after you serve 20 years in jail, and then you have the opportunity to go back before a judge, likely the judge that sentenced you, and are able to get their belief that you have reformed and been repaired and able to re-enter society, we believe time has been served. It helps us get smart on rehabilitation instead of using unscientific punishment as a death sentence for all of our children. We're out of line with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has been very clear in multiple cases that children are different, okay, because the brain science tells us such. And we need to update our laws to reflect that. We're also out of line with our neighbors. We're behind D.C., West Virginia, and the state of Virginia, let alone states like Ohio and Kentucky, who have all passed various bills to address our issue of juvenile lifers that we still have. And the racial disparities speak for themselves. Proportionally, our state incarcerates more Black citizens than any other. We often think of Maryland as a bastion for progressivism and diversity. But in this case, we are on the wrong side of history. And we have an opportunity through House Bill 409 to address that.
Maryland lawmakers approved the Juvenile Restoration Act. But when the bill ended up on Maryland Governor Larry Hogan's desk earlier this year, he vetoed it. I am also a firm believer in second chances, and understand that individuals who commit serious crimes, especially as juveniles, are capable of rehabilitation, he wrote in an April 8, 2021 letter to the Senate president. The bill was for juveniles who have committed crimes so heinous that they are automatically charged as adults, he went on to say. Quote, in many cases, the state already has procedures to carefully consider the release of incarcerated individuals. The Maryland Parole Commission, and the executive commutation process. Senate Bill 494 would upend the current system by allowing the defendant to bypass the parole process and petition the court for resentencing. Rather than create a new complex system for release, any necessary charge should be contemplated within the current parole framework. He wrote that changing the system would further contribute to the re-traumatization of the victims of these heinous crimes. But the General Assembly overturned the governor's veto. The bill became a new law. Nick Browning's attorney did not return a request for comment as to what the next legal moves could be for his client. As of this recording, Nick remains in prison, sentenced to multiple life sentences. He will be eligible for parole when he's in his early 40s. When the listener who contacted me about this case went to college, she said people would ask where she went to high school, and that would always turn into a somewhat awkward conversation about this case, as though it was a traumatizing fun fact about where she grew up. Although their high school did have counselors on hand, she remembers thinking, what high school kid is going to admit they need counseling over this? She said she still thinks about what happened to this day. And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this case. Let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. This episode was researched and written by Gabrielle Roussan. If you'd like to hear these episodes without the ads and hear additional Court Junkie bonus episodes, check out my Patreon options at courtjunkie.com/support. I just released a new monthly bonus episode about a Dallas police officer who went on trial for shooting into a reported suspicious vehicle, killing one. Monthly bonus episodes are available at the $6 and $10 levels. That's all at courtjunkie.com/support. And be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/courtjunkie. Thanks again for listening. Until next time. I love The Jordan Harbinger Show, and it's a podcast you guys really should be listening to. And I'm not kidding when I say that court junkies will especially love it. Jordan's show, which Apple named one of its best of 2018, is aimed at making you a better informed, more critical thinker, so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening, even inside your own brain. Each episode is a conversation with a different fascinating guest, and there is something for everyone here. In one episode, Jordan talks to a hostage negotiator from the FBI who offers techniques on how to get people to like and trust you. Another episode tells the story of a cinematographer who discovered a lost city in the jungle and made one of the most important archaeological finds of the century. And he just released a two-part episode with Ulrich the Mole Larsen, who's a family man from Denmark who spent 10 years undercover in North Korea, infiltrating its illicit arms trade. And I just loved the episode with Bruce Sackman, a renowned investigator who tracks down serial killers. Like I said, I really enjoyed this show, and I think you will as well. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.